Mr. Boxall, real form.
And Paddy Fields. Pierre and Brilliant, all worth fighting over.
What were your main problems in doing your particular job in Korea?
There weren't any main problems. It was just the fact that you had to keep on top of things. You know, people were needed. You've got to make sure that their particulars were sent through and that they were looked after when you got them in. My bunker used to be a fairly big one, and the MO always used it as his RAP centre when they got up on our position. And they used to come up on our position most nights, but a lot of the patrols went out to our company. So it was mainly the thing of making sure that the wounded came in, they were somewhere sheltered with a MO to look after them, and that they were evacuated securely, keep the position secure, make sure your men were looked after, make sure the platoons operated. It was just a normal thing that a company sergeant does.
What were the main lessons that you learned from soldiering in Korea, do you think?
I think the main lesson I learned was a very old saying that I learned some years ago, that any bloody fool can be uncomfortable, and it's a flyman who's comfortable. And I found that if you're going to work effectively as a soldier, you have to make yourself as comfortable as you can when it's possible.
What? Who were the officers whom you were working with in Korea?
My company commander was Major Ben Chapman. The second in command was Captain Neil Pullen. And I had three platoon commanders, and Mr. Peter Shuttleworth, Mr. Mike Dunton, and Mr. Mick Reynolds.
What did you think of the leadership in Korea?
They were good officers. There was a lot of them. Major Chapman won a DSO for his part in getting a patrol of one of our companies that walked into a minefield and getting them out of it. And he was a DSO for that. All right. And of course, the National Service soldiers, although they were pressed into going there, I admired them in many ways. They tried their best. They made the best of a rotten deal. And they were mostly cheerful. And on the whole, they were a credit to the company.
Were they much different as soldiers from the regulars?
No. I think whether you're a regular soldier or a National Service or a conscript or whatever you are, we're all mucking together and trying to do the job as it has to be done.
What was your opinion of the Chinese enemy?
Well, of course, they were entirely different because they didn't have to have a blue great admin thing behind them, I believe. It was a bag of rice and a weapon and a and something to live on, and they were quite happy to live off the land, where our troops, I mean, our people, we wanted to live as civilised as we possibly could. I mean, if you're giving our people a bag of rice, they're so mad.
Did the Chinese launch any infantry attacks whilst you were there?
Well, they did on the Cosbys, which was a position they took. But they didn't actually. We had patrol activity. We had them come up to the wire. We were shelled and things like that. But not any actual main attacks. I think the peace talks had started then, and activity was gradually beginning to lessen.
Do you remember any particular casualties whilst you were there?
Yeah, I had one of my chaps, one of our platoons, a chap named Allman was killed. A mortar bomb got beside him and his head was pretty badly mashed. Another chap was shot on patrol and was hit in the middle of the head, middle of the forehead. We had one or two people out on patrol that didn't come back and were missing and were found. One was found 10 days later and one was found a fortnight later, and the medical corporal had to get in the trench and get them out, and they were brought in to our position and then taken away. I think the battalion had about 30 odd casualties whilst we were in Korea.
How had those men on patrol been killed?
I think they'd been shot. When they come back in, if they're not found, and then you think, well, you know, they've been captured, you go and look and see, but they were found in trenches. Somewhere else they'd probably got lost and got in the trench and been hit by a mortar or a shell or something.
Did you use snipers in Korea?
Not very much, no. No, because we weren't in in the sandwich line, we were one side of the valley and the Chinese or North Koreans were the other side of the valley, which was quite a good way away. And there was the sandwich line river ran down the middle of it, so you weren't sort of on top of each other.
Did you have trained snipers?
Yes, yeah, we have people with sniper rifles, but they were mainly with specialist platoons. One was just the old infantry company, and we didn't have such things as snipers and things like that. They were just all the soldiers.
Did you ever see any of the enemy's trenches?
You could see them from our position with binoculars, but we never got. We would have seen them on positions that we took over, but they were very much the same. The only ones who were different were the Americans who lived in foxholes. I mean, they didn't live in palatial bunkers like we had. They lived in what they called a foxhole, which was a little hole scraped in the side of the hill, and that's how they lived. But we tended to have bunkers that you could stand up in, you could have a bed in, and you could have a fire in, and that was at the back of the hill. And then you had a communication trench round the hill to your firing positions and slip trenches, which were on the forward face of the hill. But I found that the British soldier tended to live in more comfort than other soldiers did of other countries, like the Canadians, the Royal 22nd Regiment of the Canadians. They weren't the best of people looking after their position, and the Americans sort of didn't seem to have the idea that the more uncomfortable it was, the more effective you were. But we didn't find that. We found out that more comfortable you can make everybody, the better they operated. It was just a sort of philosophy of the British Army, obviously.
What were these American foxholes like?
Well, they were just a small hole that you could just crawl in. It was sort of dug into the side of a hill, like a rabbit burrow, and they used to crawl in, and they didn't have, when they came to our positions and found that we had fires and bunkers that you could stand up in and walk about in, and have beds, and they were surprised that we did see it like that. And because it was obviously mostly American there anyway, although we did have the Commonwealth did, but that's what we were in.
Why didn't the Americans adopt the British trenches?
I have no idea. I suppose that was the way their army worked.
So you never captured any enemy trenches?
No, we did have one operation before we came out of the line eventually to try and capture a prisoner of war, we had quite a big firefight on, and it's all, they did eventually get a prisoner, but he was got back to an RAP when he died, so we never managed to actually get a live prisoner.
How did he come to die?
I don't know. He was got back, he was alive when he was got back to the RAP, to the regiment laid post. I suppose these North Koreans, I believe the Japs were the same, if they didn't want to live, they didn't live. They just packed it up and died.
What were winter conditions like in Korea?
Pretty grim. It froze, I suppose, about early October, or late October, early November, and it stayed frozen until March. And it was below zero most of the time. In the Samichon Valley, we had a rope on metal stakes up the hill to be able to hold yourself up and down the hill. It was very, very, very cold.
Did it snow much?
Yeah, well, we had fairly deep snow. It was very much like it was in the Ardennes in 1944. That was a very bitter, bleak winter, and it was bitter and bleak in Korea. But once again, you've still got a soldier, you've still got to have your patrols go out, you've still got to feed people, you've still got to do all the jobs that are necessary, so you have to keep doing. You have to find a way to live. And that was the thing that the British Army seemed to be very capable of doing. No matter what conditions they get into, they manage somehow to find a way to live comfortably.
Did you ever get vermin, like rats or cockroaches?
I was alive with rats. Terrible, wasn't it? One thing I hated, rats. They used to run around the bunkers, and we gradually got on top of them by traps and whichever way we could. But that was the main thing with the rats.
What were they living on?
Well, I mean, the food and that was scattered about, and there's always food in a cookout. You can't, there's odd scraps of food that are thrown away and dropped and things like that. If it's there, they find it.
Were the soldiers not told not to leave food about?
Well, yes, but I mean, you know, as well as I do, it's a fairly difficult job, isn't it? I mean, no matter what you say, someone somewhere is going to drop something, or they're going to leave a tin opening in their bunker, or something's going to happen. It's one of those things, you know, you have to learn to live with it, I presume.
Were there any illnesses amongst the troops in the trenches?
Very little. No, mostly it was infections from cuts or wounds or anything like that. You know, went bad, but there was very little sickness at all.
Was there ever anything like the trench foot of the First World War?
No, because once again, it was a case of making sure that they got out, cleaned their boots, and had clean socks to put on and things like that. It was just the general thing that the British Army always insisted on was that you kept yourself clean and looked after yourself. And it needs a corporal of a section or a sergeant of a platoon just to keep his eye on it and check people and make sure that they're keeping clean. And we had no problems with trench foot or illness or anything like that.
And yet trench foot did occur in the First World War.
Probably, but I think we weren't in quite such bad conditions as the First World War was, the mud and that. I mean, our trenches weren't quite so badly mudded. We were in a bit more hilly environment. The hills, you know, dug down into them, but it was a lot of rotten. So we didn't, well, we didn't have any problem with that sort of thing. We didn't have any, many illnesses at all.
What was on the bottom of the trench?
Normally mud, or but it's well packed down, and we didn't get a lot of rain. That was one thing. We had a lot of snow, but in the snow, of course, we all had good boots and windproof clothing and parkas and things like that. So you were able to keep warm, and if you keep warm and keep dry, you don't get so many problems.
Did you employ Koreans to help you?
Yes, yeah, we had Korean porters who used to bring up things like wire and roll the gamut wire when we were wiring, or bring up ammunition to the companies when it was needed. Porters did general sort of work like helping to dig trenches and things like that, Korean porters.
How did you find them as workers?
They were good workers, most of them. They were South Koreans, obviously, and they were good quality workers.
Were you in charge of paying them?
No, that was all done back at battalion headquarters. We just, whoever looked after them, they certainly weren't, were only up with us during the day. They used to go back off our position at night.
Were they honest?
As far as I could see, yeah.
Did you ever get to know any of them?
I had one who used to look after my kit for me. A chap named Kim. That's all I knew him as, Kim. He was the youngest boy, about 17 or 18. Good worker, nice lad. But, other than that, we had... of course, up in, if you're a frontline company, you don't have much contact with the sort of surnames and any sort.
What did he do for you?
He used to look after me kit and keep the bunker clean. And we at one place we had an officers and sergeants mess, which we built, had a big log hut that we built for an officers and sergeants mess, and we used to keep that tidy for us and clean.
You mean he used to polish your kit?
Yeah, well, he didn't polish it, because he didn't need polishing, not in those conditions. Probably used to make sure that the bunker was clean and back to the mess tins or the plates or anything between and odd jobs like that. Was something really to give him something to do.
So that was a personal arrangement you made?
Yeah, personal arrangement, yeah.
How did you come across him?
Well, he was one of the porters that came up and worked around the company position. I think he used to look after company commander stuff as well in the bunker for him.
Could he speak English?
A bit pidgin English, but enough of sort of for him to understand what we were saying, or for us to understand what he was saying.
Did any of the officers get killed in Korea?
Yeah, we had one, a Lieutenant Burney, who went out on a patrol one night, never fired on, and although they went out to look for him the next morning, never found him. He was the only officer we had killed, I think. I'll have to have a look at my notes really to see.
Did you ever get any leave whilst you were in Korea?
I had 4 days rest and recuperation leave in Tokyo.
What did that consist of?
That just consisted of going over there and stopping in a leave camp. Going out into Tokyo in the evenings and going back to the leave camp. But it was only 4 days. It was just a sort of break from Korea.
How did you get on with the Japanese?
I didn't see much of them, really. I have never been a admirer of the Japanese since their efforts during the war. Cousin of mine was a prisoner of war in Singapore and in Malaya, so I've never thought much of them, and I still don't.
Can you tell me about how you came to leave Korea now, please?
Yes, we came down out of the line into reserve, and then trained down to Busan and went on board HMTIT Orwell again, and to go to Hong Kong, where the battalion was going to be stationed for the next couple of years. We arrived in Hong Kong and went up to a camp where we sort of settled into life, the first bit of civilian soldier, or a peace officer soldier, I suppose, that I'd had. We had about our families out there. We had a couple of children by then, so Jean and the children came out to Hong Kong. We lived in a village of quarters called Sikong. I went to and fro every day to do our camp or barracks, just like we normally would anywhere else. Once again, I played hockey for the battalion and for the army and the combined services in Hong Kong. So, and what was sort of regimental life and the social occasions, life was quite pleasant.
How did soldiers regard a posting to Hong Kong in the 50s?
Well, it was a good station. It was a nice place to be. And, it was fairly cheap living. We could get down into Hong Kong and over onto the island, and there was plenty of places to go swimming, and it was quite good.
Was there ever any trouble in Hong Kong whilst you were there? Were there any problems in handling the troops in Hong Kong?
No, very little. We didn't have much trouble. There's always the odd one or the odd few that have been a problem in any place. But the thing to do is to handle them so that they don't cause too much of trouble.
How do you do that?
Well, it's mainly by knowing them and knowing what to do. I mean, there has been lately a lot of problem about bullying in the army. Now, when I was in the army, the senior NCOs and the company sergeant majors and the colour sergeants, they knew their troops, they knew their soldiers, and if there was anything like that, they stamped on it before it got to be a problem. Well, now, whether I'm right or wrong, it seems to me that they leave it until it gets a problem and then start to try and solve it. Well, I think we tended, I presume it's with experience. It's the same now that people sometimes now get promoted when they're very young, whereas with us it was, it took a long while to get up to be a company sergeant major, and when you got to be a company sergeant major, you had a lot of experience around you.
From what kind of level of rank might bullying come?
Well, I think it mainly within the troops themselves. I don't think the senior ranks, not in our day anyway, were bullies. It was curtained if a senior rank dared to strike a brown soldier or anything like that. I don't think there was any bullying by senior ranks. All this sort of putting people to make them call too much just for the sake of it. We never did things like that. If you were training that would call for a load of mud, then you did it. But we never did it to be sadistic about it. And that, I think, is the difference between being sensible and being bloody stupid.
But might bullying originate from lance corporals or corporals?
I suppose it could do, but in my experience it didn't. I think the Lance Corporals and Corporals were mainly, they realised their responsibilities and tended to try and look after the people they were in charge of rather than bully them.
But what would you do to stamp it out if you detected anything?
The thing is that it's so easy to stop it. I mean, you've only got to charge one or two people. And it soon gets down that if you behave like that, you're not going to last very long. As I tell you, as far as I was aware, bullying wasn't a problem.
But I suppose privates could be doing it amongst each other when you weren't around.
Well, yes, but you'd find out about it eventually.
How would you find out about it?
Well, either the corporals would let you know, or the corporal would tell the sergeant, the sergeant would tell the sergeant major. If the company sergeant major, the senior high rank in the company, was on his toes and knew what he was doing, he would find out about it and it would be stopped. In when I was there anyway, in any of my companies.
So you never had any instances of soldiers committing suicide?
No. No, never had anything like that.
Was there any problem in Hong Kong with soldiers associating with women?
I suppose it was, yeah. If they come from Korea, they're bound to, I think, but once again, it's a thing that the army has to deal with, isn't it?
But did it cause any problems to the battalion?
Not as far as I know, no.
Not with diseases?
No, not as far as I know, no.
Now, after Hong Kong, what was the rest of your career with the regiment like?
Well, it was, once again, I came home from Hong Kong. I went to the 4th Battalion of TA at Great Yarmouth as PSI for a couple of years. I then went back to the battalion as Sergeant Major of B Company. Then was posted to Sergeant Major of Headquarters Company. And in 1959, we amalgamated with the Suffolk Regiment to become the 1st Battalion of the East Anglian Regiment, and the Royal Norfolk Regiment remained as the 4th TA Battalion. And then in 1960, I was posted home to be RSM of the 4th Battalion, and I remained there until October 62 when I started my demob leave. The main highlight, I should think, of my career there, or my career in the army really, was that when I was out in the 4th Battalion, the Queen allowed or conferred the honour of having new colours presented to the battalion. And I, as RSM, had to sort out all the parade and all the admin for it. And in July of 1962, Princess Margaret came one Sunday to us and presented new colours to the battalion. And I suppose having doing that and meeting Princess Margaret, who was the associate colonel in the regiment, was about the highlight of my career in the army. And I sort of fitting end to it really, because I